liars. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you. And I'm wondering what it is I should do. It's so hard to keep the smile from my face. Losing control, yeah, I'm all over the place. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed the music there. My very special guest is Paul Mack. Now, Paul, do you have a website for your chemtrail activism by chance?
Yes, we do. We have Australian-New Zealand Geoengineering Protest on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Australians and New Zealand, so Australia and New Zealand against chemtrails and geoengineering. They're our two parent sites. And then we've got, you know, all of the against chemtrail groups throughout Australia. So Melbourne Against Chemtrails is the one I look after predominantly, but we've got, you know, South Australia, Western Australia, New South Wales and Queensland as well. So something set up in every major centre, including Tasmania,
mm-hmm.
and we're starting to grow all of those groups as and when local, you know, community wakes up and comes along. We're plugging them in and you know, finding leaders and getting them organised in terms of protest. We're also working in the background right now on a website, which will be released hopefully by sort of end of January. We'll have a site up that's going to take in, I guess, a more of a global perspective and networking together with the global chemtrail communities. And as soon as I get that up, I'll flick you some information and if you could advertise or plug that for us, that'd be great.
Yeah, no problem, mate, no problem. I've kind of found myself at the centre of the global movements here because I just kind of have people from all different areas of activism on the show all over the place, and everybody's asking me to help them with this and help them with that, and just overworked. So at the end of the day, I figured out that what I should do is just leave my Facebook profile page open for anybody to post on. So if anybody ever wants access to all of my Facebook followers and everything like that, go to my profile, post it right there, and it'll have the same coverage as if I posted it myself.
Beautiful, mate. All right, well, certainly I'll certainly do that.
Yeah, well, I think it's about you have to provide others tools, right? And unfortunately, what occurs to me is that tools cost, you know, in a lot of cases. You know, I've know of so many activists who would make incredible filmmakers or amazing journalists and radio show hosts, but they don't even have so much as a dictaphone.
Yep, exactly. Look, we're all seriously underfunded. We're just normal people. It's not really in our budgetary requirements to be printing materials and, you know, producing films and things like that. So we rely heavily on the network and the community of people around us. We've been really fortunate in Melbourne. We've got a great guy, Moshin, who comes and does all our film work for us, and he's great. He edits our protest videos, that sort of thing. So, you know, we get godsends like that every now and then, and they're very much appreciated and a blessing to what we do. Having said that, you know, I've lost count of the dollars that I've already invested personally. I know others have invested serious amounts of money in terms of raising awareness, and that's just part of the price you pay for getting the message out and getting the word out to the people. So I'm quite happy to do that. You know, I've got, you know, I'm a father, I've got three kids, and I'm concerned about their future on the face of this planet if this thing keeps going. And, you know, I want them and my grandchildren to have a, you know, happy, peaceful world to live in and grow up in and move on into the future with. So it's a small price to pay right now, and it's certainly an important one. I think people need to continue looking at investing from their own back pocket. We're right in the middle right now of trying to get some fundraising going for geoengineering conferences this year. You know, to date, sort of fundraising's been a little bit of a dirty word. I guess people think, oh, you know, they're another one. They're just in it for the money kind of thing. Nah, every cent gets spent, you know. there's no profit in this. We're not in it for making money. We're in it to raise awareness and wake people up, you know. So
yeah. my profit would be not getting frickin' exterminated. That's what it comes down to. Okay, so I actually want to give a plug for myself right here off the back of that. I need $2,150 from the listeners by January 18th. $2,150 by January 18th, because I am moving into a new house away from a nosy landlady and annoying screaming kids that are running down and everything outside and interrupting my bloody radio broadcasts. And of course, they only run around screaming during my radio broadcasts, even though I've told them.
Mm-hmm.
We will have a spare bedroom, and I have been contacted by a number of activists who want to come and see me. But because they're activists, they're broke as frack, I will have a bedroom mm-hmm. for them. I will have facilities ready for them so that when they touch down in New Zealand, they will have a bed for the night and we can then sit down together and perform a radio broadcast and film it at the same time. This is the service that I will be providing and have been to a slightly lesser capacity providing to the global activism community. I simply want to take it a step further and make it a little bit more intense, because I think there is room for expansion, there is room for progress, and in order to do that, I need a spare room. And I think what's happening here, and you were talking about how we can't do it for the money, you know, it's absolutely right. Like, my last paycheck for a month before becoming an activist was $4,000 cash and $11,900 worth of Westfield mall shopping vouchers. So I could have conceivably still be making 15 grand-ish a month had I not become an activist. If anybody ever accuses me of doing this for the money, it makes me want to ball up my fists and take a few of their teeth out, because it is a lie, an obscenity. It is an insult to me, to my very soul, because I have dedicated my life to helping other people who need their voices heard. I mean, do you have a radio show? Do you have a YouTube channel? Are you publishing material all day, every day, and helping other people? No, you've got your own game to do. You know, you've got a specialization. My specialization is to do that for all the people that already have their own specializations. You know what I'm saying? I'm a
Sure.
I mean, if this were the military, and if, let's face facts here, we're in a war, okay?
We are.
I am the propaganda arm of the resistance, and it is my job to get the truth out and help people broadcast it. That is my responsibility. That is my job. However, I cannot do this by myself. I need funding from the listeners, and in order to do so. And every single time that I have asked for something from the listeners in order to accomplish what I want to do, they have always responded generously and allowed me to do this. And I'm intensely grateful for the opportunity. Whilst I understand how important my role is and how much of a responsibility I have actually taken on so that this world doesn't get taken over by criminal scumbaggery, basically.
Yes.
So, yes, please, ladies and gentlemen, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate very, very generously indeed. I will not, under any circumstances, quit this job. Okay? I can't. I mean, what am I going to do? Go get a slave job? Some people can tolerate that and do a bit of activism on the weekends. I cannot. For me, this is full-time. This is my life. This is my work. And I have no other option.
I'd like to be full-time, Vinny, and that's a goal, I guess, into the future, is to get free enough to be able to, you know, do this thing 24/7. And, you know, it's a community service, you know. It is really a community service, what we're doing. And we certainly appreciate everything you do, Vinny. I've been a long-time listener for the show now. And, you know, you put some great stuff out and plenty of inspiring information, you know, come through you. So, listeners out there, you know, please support the Vinnie Eastwood Show, definitely, 100%.
Mm. Now, let's close that section off, the old shameless Vinnie Eastwood plug, and let's go back into the chemtrail geoengineering debacle. Is there anything that in particular that's on your mind that you think we haven't discussed as yet?
Well, not sure really. How far down the rabbit hole do you want to go?
David Icke asked me that question, and I said as deep as it does.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you're aware, I'm aware that this is all connected. I guess with what we're doing right now is we're trying to network really hard and connect ourselves with other like-minded groups around the country. We'd like to have a better relationship with the March Against Monsanto people, because there's a group that really needs to make the connection in terms of connecting the dots with, you know, chemtrails and GMOs. You know, we'd like to have bigger inroads with the fracking people. So they're two goals of mine this year, is to continue to develop and network those relationships. Because we can, as a greater community in terms of context, more of us is going to be more effective. We can cross-pollinate, we can support each other's activism and support each other's protests, we can share resources, that sort of thing. So,
Can I make a postulation here? I think we touched upon something very important here. Real and false environmentalism.
Yep, sure, absolutely. Plenty of that going on right now.
Could you elaborate on that? What was your understanding of the difference between real and false environmentalism in this day and age?
Right. Well, if you look at what's going on in Australia at the moment, we've just had a change of government. So where historically we've had, you know, the last 6 years a Greens Labor type power base, we've now got the National Liberal agenda being rolled out. So in that 6 years, the Get Up campaign, Get Up organisation has grown and risen, and they're, you know, forcing right now all of this issue on global warming. They're forcing, you know, the climate agenda, and like, you know, they say 2013 is the hottest year on record in Australia. Well, you can ask a lot of Australians about that, and they're just going, no, it wasn't. You know, we've had hotter years than that. And that's a collective sigh or moan around the country, like, oh, the data is just fixed, it's bullshit. And we're seeing that that's being driven, you know, by these organisations, Get Up and the Climate Action Group, this false and I call it heretic prophecy of, you know, putting all this information, oh, we need a carbon tax, because if we don't have a carbon tax, you know, the environment's going to get so hot that we're all going to fry to death. Yet they can't prove, I mean, it's the data is there, and it's been proven that, you know, even if we do have a carbon tax, it's going to change the temperature here by 0.001 of a degree. You know, it's not going to make any difference whatsoever. Yet it creates a wonderful black fund of money that, you know, can be doled out to these so-called
NGOs.
The NGOs, action groups, and they suddenly get all this funding, and they've got all this literature and, you know, all this wonderful PA equipment, and they're out there. 35,000 of them showed up on the streets of Melbourne just recently, and it was disgusting.
Mm.
It's really quite frustrating, because they've got half the picture. Yes, things are happening in the climate. Yes, we can see these changes are happening. But they need that little bit of extra information, which is these things are being caused by geoengineering. You know, these things are being deliberately manipulated, and the data is being deliberately manipulated for a false agenda, you know, a hidden agenda sort of thing. So this is something that's growing and is well established in this country right now. It's certainly something that we need to be aware of and, you know, start getting in the background of and in the face of. In fact, it was really, like I said, it was great to pull Tim Flannery out of an interview the other day and just create some disruption there. So there is an agenda in this country and right throughout the world. You know, it runs through ICLE, it runs through the IPCC, it runs through just about every scientific body that's purporting to have all of this wonderful scientific data and information. And these guys are well paid, and they know they're well paid. They want to keep their government grants, they keep their comfy little professorships, etc. So they're quite happy to be a mouthpiece and skew data as long as their little world is not upset. So it makes me angry when I see it and frustrated because I know that the people are being lied to, and it's something I'd really like to nail, you know, like put some dents in and show up for really what it is, and that is that there's, you know, a self-centred group of people in this country who are lying to us to support this false agenda, you know?
Mm. Dr. Alan Ball told me one time that what the left have done with the environmental movement is they have captured the moral high ground. So therefore, anybody who's not full on board with this climate change agenda to tax everybody and to fund the world government, you're somehow a baby killer and an evil Hitlerian douche.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, exactly. That's standard tactic 101, you know, belittle, malign, you know. Put those people on the back foot straight away, and everyone else on the back foot against them straight away. So, look, I mean, that you just blow by that with facts and data if you get the chance to present it, really. But yeah, there's a lot of that going on at the moment, and I guess we've just got to fight it, mate.
Well, I think it's there's many logical fallacies that are out there, and I believe one that could be indeed quite useful to us is the appeal to ridicule. Honestly, it's a logical fallacy that indeed works at derailing people. Oh, climate change is great, giving huge money to the world government who are responsible for death and genocide all around the world since day frickin' one of the UN is really going to improve things. Just laugh at them because they're fucking idiots.
Yeah,
apologize for that, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't mean to use such strong language, but it is unfortunately the truth. The truth shouldn't be censored, which is why I choose to self-censor. And the compromise here, I think, is that we can't tell lies, but they can, right? And it makes it an unfair fight. But what people do, and I think mistakenly do so, is they justify lying because your enemy is lying. You sink to their level. We cannot do that, okay?
No.
Here's why. We actually have the moral high ground.
And absolutely we do.
And we will only lose it by our own volition.
Yeah. We have to have integrity with what we do, everything we do, to the best of our knowledge and ability. We have to present, you know, the facts, straight facts. You know, it's tempting, I guess, to want to
get emotional.
Beat things up a little bit or, you know, I mean, like, I'm not an emotional person in that regard. Like emotionalizing things, I think is a bad way to move ahead. But I mean, as if the facts already weren't insane enough, and there wasn't enough insane amount of evidence out there. But we have to present it, you know, in a logical and truthful fashion. You know, we certainly can't go around making baseless claims and lies. Like you say, we'll derail ourselves quicker than anything if that's the case. So, and that's where you get your little co-opters and shills and trolls come in who try to pretend to be activists like this, and then you see them making baseless claims or unsupported claims and that kind of thing. There's a few of them out there, and I hate that. I really do hate it because it discredits everything that I'm doing, everything that I know people of integrity around the world are doing, like Dane Wigington and Max Bliss, guys like that, you know, who just work 100% with the facts, presenting the facts, educating the people with, you know, the information that they've got. And, you know, you look at these guys and they're men of honour, they're men of integrity. And you're right, you know, we do have the moral high ground here, and it's these slippery snakes down the road that we're trying to, you know, put a boot on and stamp out at the end of the day. So, yeah, we have to have integrity with what we do, Vinny, 100%, mate.
Now, it occurs to me, of course, that because our enemy do not have integrity, and I'm talking about the enemy of humanity here, the globalists, the New World Order, and their associated slave scum that are mindlessly following their diktat, it is not a fair fight. However, what military history has taught me is that it doesn't have to be a fair fight in order for the good side to win out.
True.
Not true. Necessarily.
Yep.
Those who have the passion, those who have the dedication, those who are unafraid, tend to emerge victorious.
Yeah, sure. You know, at the end of the day, people get to make up their own minds on this issue. And I think, you know, if you are presenting the facts in a coherent, logical way, you're doing it with integrity, that comes across in how you present, and people will take information away. I've had people go away after, you know, some of our first protests and then come back and say, you know, I wasn't sure at first. I looked, I researched, I studied. And that's all I'd encourage anyone to do with this is, you know, start doing your research, start studying it for yourself, convince yourself first, you know, and then the pennies will sort of drop. And they've come back and they've gone, you know what, you're right, but it's the way you presented it. I've had other people talk to me about this and they've gone, oh, no, whatever, you know. But the way you said it is for me to go and do my own homework, me to go and do my own research. You weren't trying to push it down my throat and, you know, that sort of demeanor, it has a much better effect. I guess we'll never really know the effects we have 100%, but just based on, you know, information like that I've received back, you know, I know that I have to keep operating at that level on that track. Otherwise, you know, you just become another mouthpiece, don't you?
Have you ever seen a politician, government representative, or a non-governmental organization activist, who's incidentally funded by the government, tell anyone ever to research for themselves and make up their own mind?
No. It's all about reading their propaganda and their information. Here's the facts, you know. Hey, trust us. Here's the facts, you know. No. And, you know, Dane Wigington taught me that, in fact. I took that leaf out of his book because just about every, I don't know, eight or ninth sentence out of Dane's mouth is, go and research this for yourself, you know. Go and educate yourself, you know. Here's a bunch of resources, but don't take my word for it. Go and study it. Go and find out for your own self, you know. And that's all I encourage people to do at the same time is, you know, go. Here's some facts that I've found, but you might want to research this yourself and, you know, see if you can, you know, get to the bottom of it, sort of thing. So I always encourage people to do that. It's important. You certainly don't see NGOs out there doing that are paid. They've got an agenda. They want you to follow their facts and their train of thinking and their line of thought 100%. You know, so it's, don't deviate.
Well, I've got an admission to make, actually, in a lot of ways. Like I've got vast sums of knowledge, but I'm never 100% sure of myself because I'm aware of the fact that we have a huge quantity of information that currently exists on planet Earth, and anything that I think that I know now and can back up with evidence could conceivably have new evidence introduced that completely reverses what I thought was once real, right? So my philosophy has been to think often and question myself as often as possible. What's difficult about that is because I'm unsure of myself, I can often trip up and say things that aren't actually true, aren't actually a factual basis. And indeed, one of my listeners said, oh, Vinny, you've probably never had a person on your show who's not credible. And I said, that's absolutely untrue. There have been many people that have come on the show that I didn't even believe or who sounded kind of like crackpots even to me. It's because I do not vet my guests. It's just simply a conversation with a new person who I've not met before, have not researched, and it's just kind of like truth is socializing, but in a media format to a degree. It's not confrontational. There's no control system and producer board and whole team of trained monkeys working behind me. This is me being genuine, being real, and being right here. This means that you cannot trust everything that comes out of this show. This means that you cannot trust everything that comes out of my mouth, because I could possibly be wrong. You must, if you're listening to this show and the guests on it, use your discernment as I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, definitely discernment is a prerequisite for this industry, that's for sure. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, look, plus something else that just occurred to me then is that the facts or the database of potential fact is also being skewed in the background. We see NASA deliberately going back into their cloud charts or producing new cloud charts. There's a cloud chart they released the other day that has 70 types of clouds on it. 70. You know, when I was at school, there was four main types and some sub-variations thereof, you know. But now there's 70 different types of clouds. So all of these wonderful new aerosol inventions, these massive things that just sort of spring out and look like, I don't know what, you know, have now got names to them and they're all being described as, you know, the rare this or the rare that. Well, they're not very rare at the same time. They're out there pretty much every day, you know. But the facts are being changed in the background, you know. That kind of information, that kind of data is being reinvented and reintroduced into the internet lexicon of information. So when we say research for yourself, discernment is the key in doing that, because even in that, you know, you will find it a 100 places to trip yourself up and be led down the road to go, oh, well, maybe, you know. I took a long time looking at this and I hummed and hawed and back and forth with myself quite a bit in terms of, is this right or am I reading this wrong, you know? But, you know, the evidence does present itself, does come through at the end of the day, as long as you dig for it.
That's true. And at the age of 29, I recognise what a wealth of knowledge I have yet to accrue. And I think it's once you stop thinking like that, regardless of your age, oh, I've accumulated enough knowledge, I know everything now, that's when you start being wrong about everything.
Yeah, a wise man once taught me you never stop learning. In fact, I was with a guy one day and he bought a book, and it was only a small book, it was only sort of yay big, you know, very thin, and it cost him $80. And I said, $80? You can pay $80 for that? He goes, no, you've got me wrong. I'm not paying $80 for a book. I'm paying $80 for the sum total of a man's life. His whole experience is written in this book. That's what I'm paying $80 for. And the light went on. I went, you know, it's how we attach value to things, you know. The way he saw that was just quite astounding. It was like he didn't see it as a small book that looked worth less than $80. He'd already flicked through it. He knew roughly what he was looking for when he bought the book. It was the experience and the knowledge that the book contained. So,
yeah,
be a reader is all I can say in that regard.
Yeah. Well, I can encourage people to do that as well. I'm not well read. I haven't actually read a book in nearly a decade. However, I interview authors on a weekly basis. So that's how I've kind of managed to justify my ignorance, is to do what most readers cannot do, is actually converse with the authors of the books which they consume.
There's something about reading though, Vinny, because you create a mental picture, you internalize it mentally, and I think that's powerful in terms of commentary to yourself when you hear yourself speaking the words in your head, that it switches something on, as opposed to just taking things from, you know, a more modern media sort of viewpoint.
This is true, and I'm often very hard on myself, and at the end of the day, I'm not as ignorant as the average non-reader, if I might be so bold as to say so. However, I am at probably a bit of a disadvantage in that respect. I have great concern, however, that others who do not read also make no effort to accrue knowledge of any kind, and merely attempt to find entertainment and distraction instead of knowledge. this is the difference between myself not reading and, say, the somebody else who might not do any reading. So I thought maybe in the meantime it's justifiable, but I'm going to have to eventually give up on my dream of not having to do. You know what reading reminds me of? Reading reminds me of university reading convoluted BS through textbooks, and I think maybe that terrible experience of reading wanky propaganda convoluted crap off of a page that meant nothing kind of soiled my my perception of the benefits and the joys of reading. That I once actually was quite an avid reader. I think when I was 11, no, when I was 12, I read Michael Crichton's 400-page book, Jurassic Park, in one day while I was at school.
Exactly. But probably the books that you were given at university, I'm tipping that's why you've had that sort of dysfunctionality with what you're reading, the content that was in them, you know, given that they were probably from the university, that's probably why. But yeah, I mean, look, there's a wide range of stuff out there you can educate yourself in. I used to be a very, very avid reader. I'm probably a bit more like you these days. I've fallen off the bandwagon a bit. But every now and then a book comes along that I go, oh, I must read. So definitely it's a good thing to do.
Indeed. Mm. All right. Now, moving on from the joys of reading the books on the page, considering we're doing a video and radio interview at this particular moment in time, have you got any sources that you can recommend, regardless of the format, so people can actually digest even more about this chemtrail geoengineering topic, something that has really had an effect on you, that has indeed advanced your knowledge in these areas?
Look, for me personally, I really follow Dane Wigington with this. I consider Dane a true friend and a mentor. Mm-hmm. And I study a lot of his research. So if you go to geoengineeringwatch.org, and or Russ Tanner for the same reason for Global Skywatch, you go to their internet sites and start getting yourself into that wealth of information right there. That's probably going to be one of the biggest things that's going to illuminate your thinking in terms of the overall impact on what's happening. We've got multimedia things that are available to us in terms of what Michael Jay's done with the What in the World and Why the World Are They Spraying movies. And Who in the World Are They Spraying is another movie that's coming out shortly. So, you know, for people who are... You there, Vinny?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm having a bit of trouble with my camera. We'll just go to break and we'll correct these problems. We'll be right back, folks. The technical issues have been resolved. We only have one more segment left with my very special guest, Paul Mack. Now, I do want to iterate to the listeners the importance of the chemtrail issue. Okay, you know, there's many conspiracies, and they're all very valuable to know about and to resist. However, none have such implications as chemtrails do. This is probably one of the most dangerous conspiracies in the world, and one of those which you get ridiculed the most for exposing, because it is that important, in my opinion. The more you get resisted, the more likely it is that there's a good reason to resist what you're doing. And if it is resisted this much, and if there's this much media demonization of chemtrail activists worldwide, you best sit up and pay very close attention. Ladies and gentlemen, I implore you to do so. If you do not have a wealth of knowledge, as people like Paul do and Dane Wigington, about chemtrail geoengineering, get off your ass, because there is a reason why you probably don't know yet. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks, Vinny. Yeah, you're spot on there, mate. There's if you're going to follow anything in life, if you're going to, you know, fight for something, and I've sort of been a reasonably long time activist in terms of I've got out in front of a few causes over the years, but this is the one. I mean, this has really made me sit up and take notice. It really hit me very, very hard when I understood fully what they're doing in terms of, you know, creating this aerosol environment that we now live in. And look, I mean, there's nothing else. Like we talked earlier, you know, you can put a filter on, you can buy filtered or purified water to get away from fluoride. You can make smart food choices and, you know, educate yourself about, you know, what numbers mean on the back of a food packet. And you know, buy what you need based on that. But you can't get away from the very air that you breathe. And you know, when I saw that happening, I thought, wow, this is it. You know, this is what I've got to engage and commit to, and probably will be doing till the day I die, I guess, raising awareness about this. So it's the one, it's the big one. And you know, if you're going to be involved in any form of activism, can I implore you that you become a geoengineering activist?
They're sorely needed. It's kind of like, imagine if in Nazi Germany there were anti-fascism activists, and there were hundreds of them, that they grew to thousands, and it grew to millions, and it completely derailed the agenda of the entire fascist regime and government. What if they prevented World War II? Okay? That is the equivalent of what chemtrail activism is about, preventing the orderly extermination of human beings.
That's it, pretty much in a nutshell, mate. I don't know if I could say it much better myself, actually. And it is an orderly extermination. That's what they're trying to do. They don't want mass panic in the streets. It's the soft kill or the slow kill, but it's definitely a kill nonetheless. And it's, you know, put it this way, if you don't stand up and fight now, you won't have another chance if these guys succeed. There'll be no more tomorrow. It's all over, Red Rover, you know. This is it. This is the hour now that you need to stand up and make a difference. Stand up and be counted, you know. You've got to do it. There's no other opportunities after this, is the way I'm seeing things happening right now. So,
yeah. Have you seen the film The Replacements with Keanu Reeves and Gene Hackman about a bunch of rich, wealthy football players who just go on strike because they want more money, and they have to hire in all these nothing people from all over the place who are really, really talented football players, but they're like working at convenience stores or scraping crap off the bottom of boats. Towards the end of the film, the professional football players have had all their contracts negotiated, and they're coming back, they're crossing the line, and they're coming back into the field. And all of these replacement players suddenly realize that they're going to be fired after this one game that they've got to play. And I think the coach, played by Gene Hackman, he says, there's something different about you that none of these other players that have crossed the line have got. There is no tomorrow for you, and that makes you all very dangerous people.
Exactly. And, you know, we need more people like that. So, yeah, there is no tomorrow, mate. It's such a big statement. I never saw that movie, actually, but I got that would be the gist of it at the end of it, that they would have some point where they had a realization about, you know, their future. And you know, people are so used to being spoon-fed, you know. Like you said, a lot of people involved with, you know, how to relax, say, or, you know, how to entertain themselves, and I'll just take my information from the news and a soundbite, and that'll keep you informed on what's happening in the world. No, it won't. No, it won't. You know, you need to wake up to what's going on above your very head right now. Just in the last technical break, I popped outside to see what was going on in the sky because we've had a very busy day with chemtrailing activity over Victoria. And the sky is an absolute mess out there. It's what we call the whiteout. You know, it starts out as a nice blue morning. You get some white tinges around the edge, throw a few chemtrails down the middle. Next thing you know, your afternoon is completely whited out. And you know, this is the solar umbrella, if you like, what they're saying they're trying to create. But it's a massive mess of aerosols. And the planet can only sustain this for so long. You know, there's only so much that the people are going to be able to take, the planet's going to be able to take. We're seeing wildlife being extinguished at an alarming rate right now. You know, mass die-offs, what I see this morning, there was 100 elk found north of Las Vegas just all lying dead, you know, in the fields. They don't know why these elk suddenly died. I mean, we're seeing pods of dolphins, whales being washed up with lesions on them. You know, we're seeing birds literally just dropping out of the sky in their hundreds. And, you know, we don't see the scientists rushing off and saying, okay, well, let's check this out and we'll come back to you. You know, you don't see that on the 6 o'clock news. Hey, we went and looked at all of this mass die-off and stuff, and guys, you got nothing to worry about. We found out it was some kind of little thing here or that thing there, whatever. There's no explanation. They're saying, oh, we'll look at that, but you never hear what's happening. And it's happening at an extremely frightening rate. It's speeding up, I believe. And I think, you know, a lot of it can be directly attributed to geoengineering. And, you know, the other great evil that's upon us right now is Fukushima, especially with the mass die-offs in the Northern Hemisphere, with the radiation that's starting to spread around the world there, and the absolute lack of transparency coming out of TEPCO in Japan, and, of course, the usual media criminals and cabal that are covering up this massive crime as well. So, you know, unless we get on top of these things, there is no tomorrow for us, Vinny.
Yeah. And the old adage, the only thing that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing, rings right. Truer today than at any other point throughout history. I've seen us at the great precipice. We will either overthrow these evil scumbaggery agents of the New World Order, and we will create a new renaissance, and we will live in relative peace until such a time as scumbags rise again. Or we're going to sit back and children will ask, so what did you do while they were taking over the planet?
Exactly.
We just sat by and watched.
And you know, and I know there's people out there who know what's going on, and they're just sitting back and watching. And I hope, you know, their conscience gets really seared by this, and they feel so damn bloody guilty that they get up off their asses and do something. Because you're exactly right, Vinny. And you know, like I mentioned before, I'm a father of three, and you know, I was trying to educate the kids a little while back on chemtrails and geoengineering, and the ex has kind of got in the way there. And so they're going, oh, you know, dad's on a crackpot thing sort of thing. But I hope in time they'll turn around and they'll look back and review what I did in these days and these hours and be proud. Because, you know, there's not enough of us out there doing it. There needs to be more. And I'm not doing it just for my kids. I'm doing it for your future kids, Vinny, for kids all over the face of the planet, you know. And I don't care if people spit and laugh on me. I'll keep speaking this message until it gets out there. And, you know, we're close to a tipping point with this. We're close, very close. They cannot physically any longer hide what's going on. They can't continue to hide and cover this up. You know, they're wanting to put the information out into the mainstream via the scientific community. They are doing that. You know, it's only a matter of time before it becomes a mainstream event and everyone starts waking up, the lights start going on, the pennies start dropping, and then people will turn around and ask some hard questions. And I don't want to find myself in a position of having known and done nothing at the end of the day. You know, I'll go and meet my maker with a conscience that's clear in that regard, that's for sure.
Mm. And it is not a choice, I don't think. It's the only person who would sit back and do nothing who would be a person who would be unaware of what's actually happening, unaware of the implications.
Well, I'd like to believe that's the case, but I know a bunch of people. Put it this way, when I first woke up to what was going on and we built the Australian groups, Australians Against Chemtrails, and started growing the Australian movement, there was a number of people who were around at that time who are no longer around. And these were people who were awake, were telling me what was going on at the time and waking me up, but they're not there anymore. They've not been active. They've just thought, I don't know what they've thought, you know. Oh, look, somebody else is here to do the work. You know, that's great. Things are going to be okay now because somebody's out there doing something. I don't know why, but they've just gone off the radar completely, whether it was just too much for them or things happened in their lives, I'm not sure. But I know that these people haven't been active and haven't been doing things. So I suspect there's a few people out there quite awake and aware. But, you know, it's an inconvenience to their life, perhaps, to get out and protest about it, to raise awareness, to be on the streets, to be laughed at or ridiculed, to be, you know, belittled.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, my friend Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored magazine, he's good friends with John. Is it John Duncan who does Nexus in Australia, I think?
Yep.
He was doing a presentation that he asked me to come and film in Auckland here called How to Not Let the Bastards Grind You Down.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Sounds good, mate.
Mm. Now, ironically enough, that the presentation that he asked me to film, he was just really exhausted, and basically he just cut it short after about 20 minutes of just sort of waffling about stuff. And what I thought was is that his presentation was irrelevant. What was relevant is simply the phrase, how to not let the bastards grind you down. This is something that we all need to understand. And we started off this interview talking about your motivation and whether or not you want to take a couple of hours off to watch a movie or relax or something of that nature, just to stop yourself from burning out. And, I will correct myself when I say, oh, you will only do nothing if you're unaware of it. It's true to an extent, but it's not entirely true. Over-awareness without an awareness of, I don't know, how to sustain yourself kind of thing, because it's a very painful thing to know that you're being exterminated very slowly but surely. And if you do not have a support network psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, I think spiritually is actually one of the most important ones. If you have faith, it's very hard to continue it all. In fact, the person who helped me start Guerrilla Media all those years ago is one of those people of which you describe who gave up on everything because he had no support network.
Yeah. Well, look, it goes back to what we were saying right at the start of the interview. In that regard, balance is the key to life. In fact, if you look at all those things, you know, those things you were just talking about in terms of faith, your finances, recreation, your health, you could effectively draw a wagon wheel and make all those spokes in that wheel. If you don't keep those spokes in a balanced, even fashion, you're going to have a wagon wheel with a dent in it, and that wheel is going to go flat. You're going to, you know, it'll be a lumpy thing, not a very comfortable method of being transported around because, you know, it's out of balance, it's out of kilter. So, you know, it's just important that, you know, you keep everything in balance in your life while going hell for leather, trying to burn everything out at the same time, you know. You've got to take time for family. You've got to take time to rejuvenate and refresh. You know, you may need to minimize that at different points in time to put yourself out further, but at some space and point in time, you've got to come back and balance all of that out so that things don't suffer in your life, you know. If you've got a job, then you need to be, you know, honest and true to that job, that employment, because if you don't, they'll sack you, and then you've got no money, and then everything will be out of, you know, kilter. So, you know, it's ever so important to have balance, and I think a lot of people do get burnt out along the way. You know, I've got a very good dear friend who has just been burnt out by all of this, and she's taken almost a year off now to get out from underneath it and underneath that umbrella. And thankfully, you know, she's coming back online now, which is great. But that's a prime example of just, you know, burning yourself out to be fully burnt out, you know. So, you know, burn the candle at both ends, but do it evenly. That's my way of looking at it, I guess, you know.
That's classic. Hey, two things reminded me there. One was Randy Mulgans from Off Planet Radio. We do this show every month, he, myself, and David Whitehead, called the Man Talk Project, the antithesis to feminism, Rockefeller feminism, that is. And right. we were talking about relationships, and Randy had been married and for much longer than David, and I'm getting married at the end of this month. And as younger men, we were asking him, how do you maintain your relationship with your wife amidst this work that you have to basically just have sit with your back to your wife a lot of the time, just plugged into a screen? And he said something very important. It's a dance. When you're moving around and around and around, sometimes you lead, sometimes you follow, but at the end of the time, you've got to be in rhythm. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that struck me when you were talking about this whole balance thing, supplementary to the dance, is when I think I lost my first slave job that I was actually really good at was telesales. I've actually been under contract. I can't actually tell people what company it was. But my previous slave boss gave me a recommendation to go to a slave recruitment company, and the slave recruiter was I love the word slave, by the way, that's why I use it so much. He was telling me about how to actually balance your life out, and he said that you've got to have a job, you've got to have friends that you do activities with outside of work that are not your workmates, like a sports team or something of that nature. He plays indoor soccer with his friends, for instance, and a form of volunteerism, right? And he said the reason for this is because if you lose your job, you still have your friends that you play football with, and you still have your volunteerism by which you retain your sort of satisfaction of contributing to your community and your society. Whereas if you lose that sports team, you still got your job and your volunteerism. If you lose your volunteerism, you still got your sports team and your job, so, and so forth. And in such way, he advised me to have this trinity of balance, so that you can indeed maintain yourself, but you can't maintain yourself by accident. It has to be deliberate. You have to lay foundations purposefully in order to keep your house in order.
Yeah. Well, look, if you lose any one of those three things, like you say, you know, you've got two others to fall back on. And the thing I read most out about that is that everything there has community involved inside of it, you know what I mean? There's people there that you can call on if you lose your job. You've got, you know, you've got one of the other ones you can go to inside of that and talk to people about it, how you might feel about that. I mean, sometimes it can be quite a big hit for people. I mean, I've had more jobs than most people in this life, and it's not ever a problem losing them. Just getting the finances sorted out is the problem. But yeah, if you've got community there, if you've got people that you can go to, you've got an automatic support network, and you know, keeping that, that is a balanced thing in your life. So yeah, I think that's good advice, man. Congratulations, by the way, on your upcoming nuptials, mate.
Oh yeah, it's going to be great. what was it? I think married men live longer, apparently. Hmm.
Why is that?
It's a good question. one has to wonder. I think it's because the nagging factor.
Ah, you're drinking too much.
All right, well, you eventually stop drinking quite so much.
Ah, you're smoking too much.
You eventually stop smoking too much.
Ah, you're too fat, you need exercise.
You eventually start exercising more. The nag factor. It saves your frickin' life.
Yep. Or it could be, damn you woman, I just want to outlive you now.
Yeah. Although I did see a film... I can't be sure whether or not married men live longer or single men live longer. I think it is married men, but this film said different, and it said that married men die before their wives do. And the person said, "Why?" And he says, "Because they freaking want to."
Yeah.
You know,
no time off for good behaviour, mate.
Yeah. It's something like that. And there was also another brilliant film with Cher, and it was called Faithless, about this assassin that's coming in to assassinate her, who's been hired by her husband to do so. And the assassin tells her a story about his uncle, who had a broken wristwatch. And he asked his uncle, "Why do you have a broken wristwatch? Why do you keep continuing to wear it? You can't tell time with it or anything like that." And he told him the story about how the wristwatch got broken. He was really, really angry with his wife once, and he actually broke it by smashing something. And he says, "Yeah, but why do you still have it around your wrist?" He says, "To remind me every day that I frickin' hate her." I felt that quite funny because there's a lot of men out there who can empathise. I've talked to so many, particularly since the rise of feminism. So many men have been left out in the cold by their wives. We've experienced this demasculation of men and an increased masculine quality in women, and it has thrown the whole partnership, that dance, that very important dance and balance that I was talking about earlier, it has thrown the entire system out of balance. Now we have 50-60% divorce rate in the main in Western culture. We have, I think it was in 1972 or 73, that said that 90% of female graduates from higher education never went on to have children. Mm. Everything that defines what a man is and what a woman is being destroyed systematically. On purpose, by the New World Order.
Yep.
We're in a sexual identity crisis. A man does not know what a man is, and a woman does not know what a woman is either. And this is why it is so important, I believe, to have these very important discussions about these relationships between men and women in an open and honest fashion, without our egos getting in the way of it, without us trying to say, "Oh, women are all to blame," or without the women saying, "Men are all to blame." We have always, throughout history, worked as a unit together to raise and care for our children, and as a result of the New World Order agenda to destroy the family unit, children are born today without any concept of family, real family, as was experienced in previous centuries. And it's a great tragedy.
Certainly in the Western world, that's the case. And, you know, statistically, well, I fall right into that bracket of was married for 13, 14 years and got a divorce. Three kids at the end of that, so you know, there's another broken family to add to that. I've been quite fortunate though with love, though, in a second time around experience, I found a wonderful lady, and there's much more balance in the relationship than there was previously, open communication, that sort of thing. So, you know, in reference to what you're saying about the New World Order breaking, this is a plan, this is a designed plan to break the family unit. The family unit is the cornerstone, it's the fabric of society, it's what holds us all together, it's the glue that you know, that society grows and lives by. And, you know, they know if they can break that down, if they can damage that inherently, then they're gonna grow and raise a generation of dysfunctionality in terms of the next kids that come through. And they can compound on that and build on that. And eventually, at the end of the day, the family unit will be just a totally broken foreign thing, really. You know, sexual relationships that are non-monogamous and committed for a lifelong experience. Where they used to be the norm, they're now rare. And I think that's a deliberate, by design thing that they're doing to tear the fabric of society open. And it's a very soft underbelly once you're inside of that, and they can just run riot. So it's from the way I see it and what I've read and understood through the years, it's a deliberate attack on the institution of marriage, to break it up, you know, to destroy it. And look, I mean, I'm not, I don't know if I want to go down that road, but look, there's an agenda basically to destroy marriage, you know, to make it meaningless or worthless. And there's very committed people out there who want to see that happen. So, you know, I don't want to start slinging rocks and arrows around, but there's certain lobbies and agendas out there who like to take new words, invent them, and then use that as a label against you. You know, you don't like that? You're one of those phobes, you know? No, actually, I'm not. I'm a person who just stands up and believes in decency and moral right, you know? But if, you know, if that's a problem for you, why don't you just denigrate me with a name?
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think that that's actually one of the most important things to recognise is morality. Okay, the reason why family units existed in the first place and morality existed in the first place, particularly at least in the United States anyway, is because of strong belief in God and a consistent reading of the Bible and its lessons to children, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Guess what's been destroyed?
Yeah, well,
you know, and it's not to say that the Catholic Church is the be all and end all. It's our source of savior and that kind of thing. I believe that God is looking for religious fruits, not religious nuts. And
I saw that on the timeline just before. Actually, it was quite good.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Ray Foxley, told me that the other day, and I thought that was actually quite a brilliant observation, is that divinity and morality do not come from a religion per se. They come directly from the divine, and there is this divinity within all of us that I believe the satanic scumbaggery New World Order wishes to corrupt in any conceivable way that it can, because that is their poison.
Well, certainly if you go down the road of Satanism and that, I mean, it's a clear and ascribed goal. I mean, they don't like human life. They don't like humanity and human beings. You know, if you do understand that there's a spiritual battle going on, then, you know, the dark side of that battle wants to exterminate humanity or God's creation inside of that. So, you know, that's why the war and the battle is on so many fronts. And I think that'll be the case until, you know, the sky rolls back and all is revealed, sort of thing. So, but, you know, I think we certainly are in the days of the latter rain, if you want to, you know, head down a biblical road, for sure.
Yeah.
You know? Now, there's a lot of prophecy that's coming to fruit right now.
That's true, including a third of the life in all oceans dying, you know?
Yeah, happening Fukushima, right now before our very eyes.
Fukushima, Gulf of Mexico, anybody? Chemtrail geoengineering, contamination of the acidity regulations in the ocean or anything? You know, any of this ringing a bell, ladies and gentlemen? We're in biblical times here, okay? What was the last time? What happened the last time when the entirety of humanity turned from God? Great Flood.
Well, it was
Vengeance. You know? Yeah. I think that maybe with the advances in technology that we have, it's kind of like the way that steel is made is by punishing iron with fire in order to create something stronger. And I believe that these trials and tribulations that we go through currently are going to be the things that will strengthen us, that will allow us to save humanity itself from both the wrath of the New World Order and maybe even the wrath of God.
Mm. Well, certainly.
I can only hope.
Yep. Certainly, save your own soul. You know, your own conscience, which is why I said my conscience would never permit me to allow this to happen without, you know, at least attempting to bring some kind of resolution to it. Because at the end of the day, you know, I think we'll all be judged for what we do in this life, and it's pretty evident to me that, you know, we're given a conscience and an understanding of right and wrong and good and evil, and those things are inherent, you know, inside yourself when you feel you're getting off track with something, and you know when you're standing in integrity, you know. Mm. So, you know, I think it's important that that we try and work towards saving, you know, as much of that as possible before it's all completely lost, for sure.
And chemtrail geoengineering activism is a good way to go about that indeed. Paul Mack, ladies and gentlemen, Australians Against Chemtrails. He is the man, the point man, if you will. And I would like you to iterate for the listeners one last time before we end the broadcast today where people can find your work and join the campaign to rid the human race of this aerosol calamity.
Sure. Okay, well, I'll plug Dane straight up front, www.geoengineeringwatch.org. Russ Tanner, along with that, Global Skywatch. Go to those two websites. Michael J. Murphy with What in the World, Why in the World Are They Spraying, and Who in the World is a movie that's coming soon. Another great film I just saw the other day. In fact, I've been meaning to watch it for a while, Vinny, Shade. I'm not sure if you've watched that yet. Shade, the motion picture. Mate, tune into it. Fantastic. Puts everything up front, all in context with Bilderberg, NWO, and then is a great geoengineering activism story. Flows out from behind that sort of first 20 minutes, and they wrap it all up for you in a nice package at the end as well. Plug into all of those, and if you want to come by to Australia and visit and see what we're doing, Australians Against Chemtrails and Geoengineering, Australia and New Zealand Geoengineering Protest, and you can plug into both our Facebook pages there. And we've got, like I said, we've got a website coming. It's just a little bit under wraps at the moment, but as soon as I get that, I'll put that up on your Facebook page, mate. So thank you very, very much for having me on the show today. Much appreciated, and great to do an interview with you. I hope we can do something else in the future.
Indeed, likewise. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening, and bear in mind, just to reiterate, I am moving house to a new studio so that I can do even more work and support more activists, and it's going to cost $2,150 to do so by January the 18th, so please visit thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and make a generous donation. We'll see you again sometime.
You are the only exception for you.